This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire. Friday, September 17th. Oh, what a game. Back-to-back Thursday night football thrillers. Both won at the buzzer. Is that not great to start the season? And it's funny because, you know, Rob and I are always texting like, oh, when should we get it? Should we get a guest lined up? Like, what should we do? And I vividly remember us saying, oh, well, the Thursday night game's crap, so we're going to need some good content. We have a great interview today with David Baker, the guy who won the Super Contest and finished second in the Circa, a.k.a. he won boatloads of money last year gambling on football. He went 5-0 in the contest I'm in last week, so we're going to talk to him about week two. And it's like a good, great, meaty interview. And then the football game happens last night, Giants-Washington, and it's a thriller. And we could probably do 30 minutes on this slop fest, and I'm sure a large chunk of it would be, is Joe Judge the first coach fired? And I just want to remind some people, I went on Cowherd's show in August, and you know they're like, well, there's no games this weekend. This is during the preseason. Why don't we do season projections? And I said, first coach fired, Joe Judge. And they were like, really? And they looked at the odds. It was like 2,800. I was like, dude, it could go south quick for this team. I'm telling you right now, the way they lost to the Broncos, and he threw a challenge flag on a play that you couldn't challenge, and the referees was like, "Dude, sorry, we can't challenge it, and we got to take your challenge." And he was like embarrassed. Like every right person who covers the team wrote about this. It's pathetic. And then they go out and lose to Washington, folks. Fifth straight season, the Giants have started 0-2. Joe Judge is on alert, and I don't want to. I mean, I don't want to say like I'm worried for Joe Judge, but. If he don't beat the Falcons next week, then he travels to the Saints and Cowboys. After that, it's the Rams. 0-6 is on the table here for the Giants. They need to beat the Falcons next weekend, badly. Or Joe Judge could be gone before Halloween. It's just an embarrassing performance. I personally got on his case on Twitter last night, and I said, wait a minute, it's 4th and 10 with like 3 minutes left. Your defense has been shredded 3 straight possessions. They went field goal, 2 plays, 75-yard touchdown. They could not stop Matt Saracen, a.k.a. Tyler Heinicke. Actually, it's the other way around, but I like to call him Matt Saracen. Heinicke, third career start, unbelievable in the fourth quarter. And the Giants punt the ball back to Heinicke. He makes the only mistake he made all game. 2nd and 7. I don't know why Riverboat Ron is throwing the football on 2nd and 7, approaching the 2-minute warning, but whatever. And Bradbury, the best cornerback maybe in the division, jumps in front of a pass for McLaurin. And the Giants are like, oh, they're in business. But instead of running down the clock, kicking the game-winning field goal, they leave all the time in the world for Heinicke. Bing, bang, boom, comes down the field. And then, of course, another Giants colossal screw-up. Just embarrassing. Dexter Lawrence, their former first-round, I think he was a first-round pick, jumps off sides after the kid missed the kick. He gets a second kick, and it's good. And Washington celebrates, and the Giants are 0-2 for the fifth straight year. And listen, it's weird. Danny Dimes was actually pretty good. I saw somebody call him. Rob G., are you ready for this? I did not know this was a nickname that existed. Somebody called him Vanilla Vic. And I found that hilarious. I laughed out loud to myself. Rob G, not exactly laughing. Guess he did not think Vanilla Vic was funny. But, I mean, Danny Dimes, 9 carries, 95 yards, broke off a 46-yarder. You know, inside the 5, it's obvious what they're doing. It's like, oh, let's just call the quarterback draw. Oh, I mean, I could see that coming from my living room. Danny Dimes, he was good. He's not to blame. I mean, he did get sacked 4 times. The offensive line lost another guy. I think a guard had a gruesome ankle injury. Danny Dimes was not awful, although if you're Kenny Golladay, he showed some frustration there on the bench in the fourth quarter. 8 targets, 3 catches, 38 yards. And the look on his face said, I left Detroit because I was sick of this crap. And now it's happening in New York? Like, Golladay doesn't seem happy. Saquon Barkley on the sideline. After the kicker made the field goal, it looked like someone ran over his cat. He was so despondent. I felt bad for Saquon. Like, I mean, first of all, he can't get on track. His offensive line stinks. This is not good in New York. I mean, Rob, you know I'm a Jets homer. Who's going to finish with a better record this year, the Jets or the Giants?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'm hitting you with an early tough question. The Giants, like, they're just finding ways to blow games.
Yeah, I mean, I like to say this is one of those things where this is why bad teams stay bad. I'm glad you brought up the whole, the two-minute little portion of the game where the Giants get the big turnover. They get a chance to really ice the game, at minimum get the field goal, which they got, but at least run some clock. Their decision, shout out to Jason Garrett. Let's give the ball to Saquon Barkley two straight plays for 3 yards when coming into that drive outside of a 40-yard run, which is kind of fluky.
First quarter, I think, right? Second drive, maybe? First
Something
drive.
Like that.
Yeah.
Other than that, he had been 10 carries for 16 yards up until that point. So that's one. Number two, I mean, I don't want to pile on Dexter Lawrence. I'm sure he feels bad. I mean, someone go check on him and his family this morning. But isn't Joe Judge a special teams coach? It's like
he was in New England.
Like, this is why bad teams stay bad. They can't get out of their own way. They continue to make dumb mistake after dumb mistake. And you're right when you say this is probably, maybe not this loss, but this is going to be the third or fourth domino in a series of dominoes that leads to him getting fired this season.
Yeah. I should point out Darius Slayton on my fantasy team caught a TD earlier in the game, had a pretty bad drop of a wide open touchdown late in the fourth quarter. Costly. But so much happened after that that it's like, can't really kill the guy. That being said, Rob, I just went back and looked. Are you ready for this? So they get the ball back on the Bradbury pick with 2 minutes and six, 2 minutes and about 16 seconds left. Jason Garrett, 4 plays, 3 yards. It took off 16 seconds on the clock. 16 seconds. All you got to do is get one first down and boom, you got the game. As you said, run Saquon up the middle twice. And then incomplete pass to, which was a pass that was not accurate by Danny Dimes. Folks, I'm not going overboard. The Giants are in some trouble. Like, you can't lead. I mean, I think they led for probably the bulk of this game. Yeah, they led almost the entire. Yeah, they did lead the entire way. Washington did take a lead on the Ricky Seals Jones awesome touchdown catch with 4 minutes left, and then they won it on the Dustin Hopkins field goal. Otherwise, Washington was basically trailing for most of, like, 90% of the game. They did lead at halftime, but they scored with 20 seconds left in the half, and then the Giants 5 minutes later, early in the third. Started to come back, but like Washington, they're not great. By the way, this defense last year, Rob, that was so awesome, led by Chase Young. I don't know. The Giants had 6.1 yards per play, man. Like, this is a sloppy game. Both teams, over 80 yards in penalties. The Giants with 11, no bigger than the Lawrence offsides. Giants 1 for 3 in the red zone. They're just not a buttoned up team. This is a coach that's probably going to get fired. And you don't wish that on anybody because it obviously stinks. But I don't know. Rob, do you think there's any chance, any shot in the world, next Thursday is as good as the first two Thursdays?
I mean, you thought last night was
good.
Do
you know who the games are? The game is next weekend.
Is it Carolina?
Carolina.
And not the Jets because they played the Jets last week. It's not going to be somebody good.
Houston Texans.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. This is going to be exciting. Fireworks. Tyrod Taylor versus Sam Darnold. Are you kidding me?
Come on. Sammy D, baby. No, listen. It should be good. Because the Thursday night games are always good. I mean, Houston's going to get boat raced by Cleveland. Probably sit their starters in the fourth. And they'll end up rested and ready at home for Darnold in the prime time. Now, Darnold could beat the Saints. I don't want to give away a best bet, which is going to be at the end of the podcast in NFL. Darnold could beat the Saints. Obviously, listen to the interview with Baker, David Baker, a really sharp NFL mind. If you listen closely, he seems to think Sam Darnold has a chance. Now, what if Sam Darnold goes 2-0, and then he goes to Houston on Thursday Night Football and wins? I don't even know if he won 3 games in 2 years with my Jets. Man, this is wild. At any rate. All right, Rob G., any final thoughts on Washington 30, New York Giants 29?
Look, man, Riverboat Ron better be thanking his lucky stars that Joe Judge managed to lose this game rather than have Judge his team win it.
By the way, final pick. It is in my picks at the end of the podcast, college football. Do you have a UCLA Fresno pick? Are you going to the game?
I'm not going to the game. It is my daughter's birthday party night. So I will not be going to the game. But you know what? Fresno State's better than people think they are. I know that they don't seem like they would be a good team because it's Fresno State. But they're pretty solid. This is one where I would just take the Bruins on the money line. I wouldn't feel comfortable laying the 11, I believe is what the point spread is.
Interesting. I guess I'll just have to wait for best bet at the end of the podcast. All right, folks, without further ado, let's get to him. David Baker, NFL gambler / poker star.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a return guest. He was so good last year. You guys really loved his stuff. Another NFL gambler. Listen, we're trying to bring in the smart guys, make all of you guys better gamblers. His name is David Baker, and he just happened to win the Super Contest last year. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, not quite hundreds, but he won a lot of money, and he's off to a good start. It's funny, David, we had a guest on yesterday. I don't know if you know Adam Chernoff. He went 5-0 in the Circa Contest in week one. Nice. You have, I'm trying to count the entries here, 6 entries in the 2 contests?
Well, yeah, last year we did 2 in the Westgate Super Contest and 2 in the Circa. And this year we just stepped it up, put a third one in each. So, yeah, we have 3 in the Super Contest, which we won, and 3 in the Circa, which we came in 2nd. So try to go back to back. So,
man, you go back to back. Like, I know somebody did that. I forget his name. He's kind of a old school. Fezzik, that's it. Yeah, yeah. He did it way back when there was like 800 people in the contest, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like I don't 4,000. Know how many were in, but I'm sure it was less than now. Now these things get a lot of press and Circa as overlays and things like that. So they get a lot of people.
All right. So I don't want to recap too much of week one, but I do want to hear what were your 5 and like, can you just talk me through the strategy briefly on those 5 last week?
Okay. I mean, basically our strategy is we have 6 entries, 3 in each contest. Mm-hmm. We try to really hone in on the games that we really like, and we put them in most, if not all, the entries. That's what we did last year. So if we hit our big plays, then we have a bunch of entries that make it through. And if we don't, then, you know, we're just out. That's fine. So each week's different. Some weeks there'll be 3 games that we absolutely love. Some weeks there'll be 4. Some weeks there'll be 5. This week, the first week, there were 5/6. So we either we had 6 games that we put in between 3 and 5 selections each. And then we had a couple of ones that we scattered in there. We were heavily concentrated. We went 7-2 overall on all the games that we chose. But the games that we were heavily concentrated on, we went 4-2. And then the games we weren't, we went 3-0. So it would have been good if we put those in. Yeah. But our big misses were Tennessee and Minnesota.
Wow, you like Tennessee. Well, if you liked them last week, you gotta love them this week.
I'm really big on Tennessee this year, and they disappointed. But we did nail some other ones. We had the Broncos, we had the Seahawks, we had the Niners, which we got a favorable line in the contest. Yes. I know you know, most people lost money if they bet the game at 8.5, but the contest was 7.5. And then we had the Eagles.
Interesting.
Which was kind of strange for us. We're normally anti-Eagles. But the line disparities between the Eagles and the Falcons was just so massive that we've really been focusing on line play and trying to find where we've got big edges in the line. I think that's
an Wait, sorry. Let me interrupt, Dave. Line as in the Vegas line or the offensive line?
I'm talking about the offensive and defensive lines. And that's the strength of the Eagles is really, I mean, when you look at their skill position players, they're not really that sexy. You look at the Falcons, they kind of are. And so I think that line kind of builds in a little bit of, you know, Fish thought that, you know, well, the Falcons have all these great fantasy players and the Eagles don't. So people just bet the Falcons. But in reality, football comes down to the trenches. And, you know, the Eagles just had such an edge there. We decided to take the points. And also the more people that I listen to that look at football in kind of a fishy way, it was like almost unanimous on the Falcons. So that's kind of a pretty good sign right there.
Yeah. Wait, you said in a fishy way, is that derisive or?
Okay. So for those who don't, I'm a poker player first and a sports better second. Yes. A fish is kind of like
a square.
Yeah. Square.
That's the guy who comes to your poker game and just, you take money off him easily. He's,
you know, they're just playing a style that's exploitable. And that's kind of in the sports betting world. I mean, you just look at, you know, who has the best wide receivers and quarterback, or I mean, quarterback is obviously the most important thing going, but you're just looking at wide receivers, running backs and thinking, oh, well, how could this team lose? You know, I drafted this player in the second round of my fantasy and this one in the third round. And nobody on the Eagles was selected in the top six or seven rounds of fantasy drafts. So, you know, I think that's how a layman kind of looks at it a lot of times that are betting these things. And really the offensive and defensive lines just control so much of what happens. And it's not necessarily who has the best running back, but what offensive line can create holes for him. And what defensive line can apply pressure and force quarterbacks into mistakes. Now, some quarterbacks is going to have less of an effect on than others, but you know, when you're talking about immobile quarterback like Matt Ryan, like the pressure is going to, you know, affect them a little bit more than say a mobile quarterback like Kyler or something like that.
Yeah. All right. So based on that, I'm going to give you two picks. You tell me if they're fishy or not. And I want to start with a tough game this week. Okay. So Colts offensive line got basically, I thought, dump trucked by Seattle, which doesn't even have a good defensive line. And if you look at the injuries, they're still banged up on the line. They now play the Rams, who mauled the Bears, kind of shaky offensive line, although the Bears did run for 100 yards. The line is, I believe, 4 in the contest. I know a lot of people are like, you got to take the Colts. You got to take the Colts. For me, it's Rams or pass. Is that a fishy play?
I don't think so. I like the Rams. The Rams are one of my favorite games this week. I'm very anti Colts, to be fair. I'm very anti Carson Wentz. And even though the Colts were a strong reason we won last year, I'm off them to start the year. I'm not saying that I won't get them on them in some spots and I won't get on them later in the year, but I feel like this team has a lack of cohesiveness right now. And, you know, Carson, who's basically was out for most of last year, dealt with COVID, dealt with injuries, didn't have a lot of time to prepare. The offensive line is really banged up. They don't really have skill position players that can really threaten deep. Jalen Ramsey's already going to take Pittman out anyway. And so you're dealing with, you know, a lack of weapons, a lack of offensive line versus probably, I mean, the one advantage that the Colts have a lot of times is their coaching. I mean, I think Frank Reich is one of the better coaches in the league, and one that he's not better than is McVay. So, I mean, I think you actually have a coaching advantage or neutral with these two coaches. We obviously have a huge quarterback edge with Stafford over Wentz. We have a line edge. We have a skill position edge. We have a cohesiveness edge. Even though Stafford's new there, he was still practicing. He didn't have any COVID issues. He didn't have like a bum knee. Plus he's just a veteran it's not that hard to get on the same page as Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. I mean, I feel like the Rams should dominate this game on both sides of the ball. Okay. I was happy to lay the 3 with the Hawks at the Colts last week. And that was one of our big winners, our big no sweat winners. And I'm only having to lay a point, which what I think is a much better team. I mean, I think the Rams are a better team. I don't really see a problem here.
Yeah. So let me just, David, I quickly Googled the Colts injury report. And again, this is based on Wednesday. You know, we're recording this Thursday. They're still practicing. So Darius Leonard, their star linebacker, didn't practice yesterday. Obviously that would be significant. Yeah. Quentin Nelson, their best offensive lineman, did not practice. Xavier Rhodes, their best cornerback, didn't play last week, did not practice. And their other tackle, Braden Smith, did not practice. Fisher, the guy coming off the Achilles from the Chiefs, did not play in week one, light practice. No idea if he's going to play. I mean, David, that's as banged up an offensive line as you could find going against Aaron Donald and company with the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Rams and they're just stacked everywhere. And like you say, there is a lot of injuries. And I think the key to week two is obviously it's a big overreaction week or underreaction week. And you have to decide like what teams the market is correcting itself on and which ones it's not. I've noticed from the people that I've listened to recently over the last couple of days is a lot of people either want to take all the teams that looked bad last week or take all the teams that look good. And it's not necessarily a cookie cutter thing. You've got to decide, you know, who looked good because they're really better than we thought they were, who looked bad because they're really worse than we thought they were, and who just had an off day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not ready to just write the Colts loss to the Seahawks off to a bad day. I just really think they're a mediocre team, and the Rams just all the edges that the Colts might have against some teams, they don't really hold against the Rams.
Okay. A total agreement there. So I feel good that I'm not quite a fish. Although this one, you're going to call me a fish. So you said you were on the Vikings last week. They now travel to Arizona and play the Cardinals, who everybody's overreacting to. I said Kyler Murray could win the MVP, you know, silly stuff like that. I really like Arizona in this spot. Now, I haven't bet it yet. I'm waiting to see the line in the contest. I think it's gone up from what, 2.5 to 4? I don't know, David. I didn't like anything I saw from Minnesota. They were largely outplayed for three quarters. If Zach Taylor doesn't go for it from his own 30-yard line, the Bengals may just roll in that game. And it doesn't even go to overtime. I know there was the Dalvin Cook fumble, but where are you on Minnesota and Arizona? And I have a follow-up on Minnesota because there's some internal stuff that's starting to leak out there that I don't know if you care about, but I'll ask in a sec.
All right. Well, first of all, I don't think you're crazy that Kyler could win the MVP. Okay. I was a little down on the Cardinals this year, just in season long and things like that, strictly just because the division is so difficult. And I thought they'd have a tough time winning more than maybe two games interdivision with the Hawks, Rams, and Niners. But as just a team in itself, if they were in the NFC East, I would have probably loved them at like over 10 or something. So I think that the Cardinals have potential. I think you're kind of looking at that Minnesota game. Everybody is kind of looking at that. The Minnesota was just a giant, just took a giant poop on everybody out there in Cincinnati. But they were out called penalty wise. I think they had like 11 penalties in the first half, and the Bengals had one. So I'm not necessarily ready to just say that they're bad. I do hear some of the internal fighting and that these guys don't really like each other. And I'm not really sure that they rally around Cousins. And, mm-hmm. you know, he had all that vaccine talk at the beginning, and there's a lot of question marks there, but right now, skill wise, I'm not ready to write them off. I am going to keep my eye on them though. I mean, we're only in week two, so I reserve the right to change my opinion on them. One thing that I did last year that I hadn't done in years past is just allow myself to not be stubborn and to change my opinions on teams. I went into the year thinking that the Vikings were the real deal and we're going to contend in the North. I'm not ready to write off that opinion yet, but at the same time, if this team continues to play sloppy, not play together, not play for a common cause, I also think Zimmer is a really good coach, but there's also the possibility he's lost the team after multiple years and a bad season. So I'm just going to watch them closely over the first few weeks, but until proven otherwise. And when I mean proven, I mean multiple weeks, I'm going to ride the Vikings and think that they're going to be okay.
So you're going to
take the Vikings in this game personally.
You're not?
I am going to take the Vikings.
Oh, you are. Okay. So The Athletic had a piece on Zimmer after the overtime game, said that, you know, the fans are like chirping about the defense and Zimmer's like very defensive, saying if you polled all the offensive coaches in the league, they would say I'm still ahead of the curve. And last year we pulled off one of the best coaching jobs with the group that we had on our roster. So, you know, Zimmer, a little defensive. They did sack Cousins three times. I think the rookie Darisaw, I don't know, is he or the rookie on the offensive line? I don't even know if he's playing yet. Dalvin Cook could not get untracked. I think he had 60 yards rushing. However, they did sack Burrow five times. Do you trust that defense? It was rebuilt. Patrick Peterson, by the way, chirped all offseason, taking shots at the Cardinals, even though they stood by him when he had the PED thing. And like, Arizona's not really happy with Peterson coming in. He did get torched by Chase and company last week. I don't know what you like about the Vikings.
Well, I mean, the Vikings have new parts on defense. And I mean, the cornerbacks are new. They got Danielle Hunter back from, he sat out, I think, because of COVID last year. Obviously, last year, they were a massive disappointment. It's kind of funny that Zimmer said that they overperformed because they were one of the worst defenses in the league last year. So I'm not really sure where that comes into play. But I will say that I think they're a work in progress, and I think they're going to do better. I think the Bengals might have a decent offense. I mean, we all hated on the Bengals, but I think mostly that was because of their defense. I think we all know that they have weapons. They have a really bad offensive line. So, I mean, it basically comes down to what we just talked about a little while ago. It's can the offensive line hold up long enough to give Burrow time? Because if he can get the ball in the playmaker's hands, then the Bengals offense is good. But let's not act like the Bengals just torched them. I mean, they scored three touchdowns. I mean, it's an NFL football game. They scored 24 points in 70 minutes of play. So yeah. I'm not ready to just say that they were completely outplayed. Minnesota made a lot of mistakes, penalties, fumbles, blown coverage, everything. But then you also have the flip side that part of Kingsbury and Murray's skill set is the unknown, that they do things that are harder to prepare for and just different because you're not scheming against, you know, that quick vertical pass. I mean, that quick horizontal pass, get the ball in the route runner's hands as quickly as possible and then take the shots deep, you know, Kyler's legs, all those things. Peterson has those playbooks. I mean, he's been running, you know, against this team on defense for, you know, all the years that Kingsbury and Murray have been here. So he might bring some schematic things to the Minnesota defense to help neutralize them a little bit. I don't think you're going to shut them down, but I do think that, you know, maybe, you know, he can steal a possession or two away. And I just think this is a close game. I think these teams are pretty equal. I mean, the beginning of the season win totals, I think, were between 8.5 and 9 for both of them. So that essentially means that Vegas thought they were even teams and you can get more than a field goal. I think it's fine. I actually thought this line would have been a little higher because of how bad Minnesota was perceived to have looked and how good Arizona did look. But 3.5 is fine for me. I'm anything north of a field goal, I feel comfortable with.
Let me ask, do you think Arizona's undervalued because Murray was not 100% the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 games last year, and they kind of fell off the cliff? Remember, I think this team started 7-2 after the win over Buffalo, maybe 7-3, but they were really good with Kyler healthy. Then he got hurt, and they were just not the same at all.
I think Arizona's just undervalued because people don't like Kingsbury. I mean, honestly, I really think that's a lot what it is. And it's more of like a show me thing. They were decent, but this is kind of a show me. Like, I don't know if everybody just fully buys into this Kingsbury system or Kyler. I mean, I think everybody knows that Kyler's a great player, but I don't know if everybody trusts him. I mean, even as great as he looked against Tennessee, I mean, some of his highlight throws were throws off of his back foot.
Yeah.
And it's great that you're able to do that. And when they land in Kirk's arms and he takes them in for a touchdown, then you're a genius. But I mean, there comes a lot of times where those patterns get blown up, they get undercut, you know, he's off by just a little bit. So, I mean, you're going to take the good and the bad with him. And, you know, I think they were definitely on the plus side of a lot of variance. They really put a lot of pressure on Tannehill. The offensive line for Tennessee was awful. I think Minnesota's offensive line is better. I mean, obviously, you know, you've you've detailed some of the problems they have, but I don't necessarily think they're in the Tennessee camp as far as offensive line.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I don't know where you are on trends. You never want to just blindly bet trends. But one thing that jumped out to me was that the divisional underdogs in week one historically have been great. And they were 2-0 against the spread this past weekend. Now, apparently that carries over into the month of September. And again, trend alert. Since 2006, dogs in divisional games in the first 5 weeks are 60%. There just happened to be five divisional dogs this week. And those divisional dogs in that same time span since 2006 are 61% against the spread in the first 3 weeks. So I know that's a lot of numbers, but bottom line, divisional dogs, are there value in any that you see this weekend? I'll rattle them all for you. The Bucks, obviously huge favorites over Atlanta. There is Saints Panthers, which is tasty. Bills Dolphins, Patriots Jets. And then the final one is Lions Packers.
I don't necessarily love any of those. I mean, it does make sense from a standpoint of, you know, early in the season, you have things to go back on as far as what coaches do schematically and you're more comfortable with the personnel. So those games should be a little bit closer. One of the games you mentioned, I actually like the other side. I think there's a little overreaction to Buffalo's bad performance. And, you know, Miami played a game that they had to win in Buffalo on game 17 to make the playoffs. And the Bills didn't need the game and played Matt Barkley, I think. I don't know. Yeah. And completely blew them out of the water. And I think this is just a complete different class of team. You're going to have a pissed off Super Bowl contender who was basically embarrassed at home against a middling team in the Bills. And I think they go out and they put it on the Dolphins. So I'm going to buck the trend on that particular game. The other ones are pretty high spreads. I do think Carolina, if I had to pick one of those that I would go with, I think Carolina has a real shot against the Saints this week. But I don't really have much interest in the 11-point spreads of the Falcons or Lions. They just might, those teams might just be superior that they're playing with against.
You made a point. I jotted down a note here in the Bills Dolphins game. Miami kind of won, but they got lucky. I was on the Patriots in the contest. One of my two losses, you know, if Harris doesn't fumble inside the 10, the Patriots win and cover. I mean, Patriots ran for 100 yards. I thought Mac Jones was very good through the air. Like, they should have won that game. Miami luck box victory, in my opinion. But I do wonder, you mentioned the offensive line, and Buffalo's offensive line got crushed by TJ Watt. And I think they had something like 6 holding penalties. Not quite Tennessee Titans Vikings, but any cause for concern there?
You know, I'm just going to trust. I think Dable, but, you know, obviously Bieniemy as well, but I think Dable is probably the most innovative offensive coordinator in the game with the Bills. And I think he's just going to find ways to either patch that thing together or call plays that, you know, get over pursuit by the Dolphins and more dumps, more Josh run, just call Josh Allen, just runs. I'm just going to trust that there's a reason why the Bills were basically the second pick to win the Super Bowl going into the year. And, you know, they were a game away from the Super Bowl last year and they blew out this Miami team in a must win spot last year. I'm just going to trust that this coaching staff is good enough and Josh Allen is good enough. I'm not willing to throw away what I thought to start the year. And I thought Josh Allen, legitimate MVP candidate, McDermott, legitimate coach of the year candidate, Dable, the hottest prospect for a head coach job. I like their skill position. I think the defense played fine against the Steelers. And I'm not fully trusting Tua yet. So I'm just going to ride this. I'm just going to ride this, this Bills. I think if the Bills would have gone out and beat the Steelers like they were supposed to, that this line is closer to six.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to take, I think there's line value in the Bills. And I'm just going to trust my preseason expectations. I'm not throwing away my preseason expectations really until like week three. I want to see two or three weeks before I'm, I don't want to be stubborn, but at the same time, I'm not just gonna, you know, flap in the wind, you know, whoever the team of the day is.
One more quick one. I don't know, or maybe I'll let you pick a game that maybe you're seeing something out there. I think Broncos Jacksonville is super interesting, but I think Niners Eagles, those are two good games. Like you, I mean, I think it's a fishy play, but I kind of like the Niners there. But you're high on the Eagles. So I don't know, which would you rather talk about? Or is there a different game that you feel like maybe people are overlooking?
Well, first of all, I'm not high on the Eagles in general. I was just high on the matchup.
Okay.
My partner actually is high on the Eagles. So he's kind of been pushing me and riding me to get on the Eagles. And you know, credit to him. He kind of pushed me into not just blindly fading the Eagles every game. I don't really know what to make of this game, but my gut leads me toward San Francisco. I don't really think it's going to be a strong play, but again, you have a team that people are just going to remember the end of that game or the score, and where the Eagles really have a chance to prosper is when they have the line advantage, like they did against the Falcons. And they're not going to have that against the Niners. So really, how are they going to move the ball when they really can't dominate up front? And if they can't dominate up front and they can't apply pressure to the quarterback, because San Francisco has a good offensive line as well, I think all the things that the Eagles are good at, San Francisco is good at neutralizing, and then they're just better everywhere else. I mean, we obviously have a massive coaching edge, quarterback edge. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I still think Jimmy's fine. I still think Jimmy's good, but you know, that's debatable, I guess, whether Jimmy or Jalen is better. But I just think all around this team is better at every position. I mean, the Eagles are like $30 million under the cap. So, I mean, they're missing, they're like a quarter. They have like only three quarters of salary that other teams are using. So yeah. Obviously that's gotta be somewhere there. They have a chance to be better than they really are. So, and the Niners are poised and going for a Super Bowl. So yeah. I don't think there's a letdown. I think maybe if the Eagles would have looked bad against the Falcons, maybe you could claim letdown spot, but I think the Eagles got the attention of the Niners this week, and it might be just show them who's boss.
Yeah, it's weird. I see a lot of people, and again, when I say see a lot of people, you turn on a TV, radio, podcast, you go on social media, a lot of people like the Eagles this week.
Well, if you look before the season started, the Eagles were probably, I think they were like maybe fourth worst in like over under for wins for the season. So they were a bottom five team going into the season in most people's minds. And now all of a sudden San Francisco, who I think was the NFC favorite, now we're laying less, we're laying 3.5 with a bottom five team, a bottom five roster versus a top five roster with a top five coach versus a bottom five coach. I mean, I know it's on the road and Philly's not the easiest place to play, but I mean, did really that much change in a week to change your mind? If the Eagles, and obviously this is a lot of ifs, and you can't really say if this happened, then because it did happen. I mean, the Eagles went out and dominated the Falcons, but you know, they play that game 10 times. The Falcons should win half of them. I mean, they were 3-point favorites. I don't really think they're gonna. I don't think the Eagles just sweep them. So if the game plan plays out and the Falcons look good versus the Eagles and are able to, you know, keep the game close or win the game like they were supposed to, I mean, I think we're looking at a touchdown spread here. I mean, especially if the Niners don't give up, you know, 16 points in the last 2 minutes, which I'm going to completely discount that. I mean, that was complete garbage. So why would the Niners not be a touchdown favorite against a bottom five team on the road? I mean, it's basically, I don't really think there was a lot of distinction between the Lions and the Eagles and the betting markets to start the season. Yeah. Obviously the Lions were a little worse, but not a lot worse. Not 4 points worse.
Yeah, I would agree. Could you say though that, well, hey, David, everybody was wrong about the Eagles. Nobody knew this team would be that good. But again, the markets are rarely that far off, right?
Right. And you definitely could say that. I mean, can the Eagles win 10 games and be that surprise team? Sure.
Maybe.
It's possible. And that's fine. That's it within the range of outcomes. But I mean, when you're looking at betting, you're only looking to, you know, it's going to be 55-45, you know, one way or the other. You just want to be on the 55%. And I think more likely the range of outcomes is the Eagles are a 6-8 win team and the Niners are a 10-12 win team. And I'm laying 4 points with a more cohesive unit, yeah, with a first year head coach who wasn't even a coordinator. I don't think he was a coordinator.
He never called plays, I don't think, in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. And versus Kyle Shanahan, who is widely regarded as the best play caller, the best schemer in football. He's definitely a top five coach. You know, I mean, obviously we got McVay and Belichick and you know, maybe Reich in the discussion, but Shanahan's a top five coach. So I'm just going to trust him laying, you know, 3.5 here and just live with that.
I mean, we can wrap it on that. I will just say there's 4 spreads of 3.5. I mean, and I think 3 spreads of 3 this week. I just, those always kill me. For Patriots this past week. I had Ravens like an idiot on Monday night. But 3-2. I mean, hopefully, listen, it feels like a 5-0 this week. I'm glad you talked me out. I was looking at the Dolphins, but I think you made enough points that I was like, yeah, no. I mean, it's going to be hot there. 90 degrees, you know, supposedly Miami has an advantage in September. Teams come in. They're not ready for that heat. Yeah. But apparently the numbers say otherwise. Anyways,
I mean, that's just me. And I might, you know, look, I use fish logic too. You know, sometimes I just look, this team's better than this team and I'm going to play it. And it doesn't necessarily fit the spot or whatnot, but I'm just not seeing Buffalo started out 0-2. Are they going to cover? I don't know. But if I had to guess, is it a close game or a blowout? If I know Buffalo is going to win, which I feel like they will, I'm not willing to. 3.5 is not enough for me personally.
I was looking at Miami, and then you look at the recent matchups with Flores against the Bills, and the Bills have killed him. Yeah. Like the last 4 meetings, all double-digit wins, and you're like, wait a minute, why do I like Miami again?
Anyways, right.
All right, he's David Baker. Dave, you want to pop anything? I mean, are you thinking of starting a podcast? Or, I mean, everybody has a podcast.
No, I mean, I do a weekly show on Run Pure Sports, which is mainly a fantasy site, and they do fantasy and betting stuff, so you can get a run Pure Sports. I'll do a show there every week, usually on Friday. I'm still playing a lot of poker, so football is kind of in between poker. We got the World Series of Poker coming up in a couple weeks.
Oh, you're so, in it?
Yeah, I'll be playing all the events. There's like 60-70 events I'll be playing.
Wow.
20 or 30 of them. So maybe we can come on, talk some poker and some more football later in the season.
I mean, since you brought it up, how do you practice or like get ready for the World Series of Poker? Like, what, just playing tons of poker, or is there any?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing live poker's back open here in Vegas, and I play a lot of the different variations of poker. So they're called mixed games. Those who aren't familiar with poker is not always just no limit hold'em where you get 2 cards and you can go all in or not. There's 5-card games, 7-card games, stud, hold'em, Omaha, a lot of different things. So I play in a game like 3-4 times a week here in Vegas, and you know, watch videos, talk to friends, think about spots, think about hands. You can run calculator numbers. That's not really my thing. I'm more of just kind of a figure it out myself type of person, but you can, you know, if you want to practice or you want to train or do things, there are programs and things that you can look at. Mm-hmm. But that's not really,
by the way, I forgot. I think I might've asked you this last time. Are you allowed to play poker in all the casinos, or are you just banned from some of them?
Oh yeah. No, poker you can play. I mean, it's not like blackjack or anything. Like pros make up a majority of the players in the game. We don't have any special powers or anything. We're just
Well, I know with the sports gamblers, people love talking about how they get banned and limits lowered. Are you in that category?
No, I'm not in that category. I'm actually kind of a sports betting fish because I have no discipline. Like, these contests are great for me because when I have to pick 5 games that I like, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good identifying. When it comes to actually betting, if I lose a couple, like, what's the next game? Oh, Hawaii. Let me, you know, fire it on Hawaii. You know, I'm one of those type of guys. So I try not to do that as much. These contests really give me an opportunity to highlight the things that I'm good at, which is identifying a few games that I like and just riding with those. So also, you know, we've been very fortunate. We've just run very, very, I'm not going to act like I'm like a lot of your guests who are these, you know, very detailed, amazing, analytical pickers and things. I'm a combination of, I look at stats and trends and things, but I also, I trust my eye test. I trust the eye test. And,
you can't say that around those guys, Steve.
You can't.
And I, you know, like, oh, what do you, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Meanwhile, all the stuff everybody says, David, the market already knows all that. I mean, they know everything. Like, you know,
and you know, near the end of the contest last year, we were close, and I have friends who are really sharp sports bettors, and a couple of masks, you know, hey, do you want to know what, like, the sharp guys? I'm like, no, you know, we're just going to trust with what we went with, you know, with what we see. And I'm very lucky, you know, my partner, Mark Gregorich, he sees football a lot the way that I do. We have very little disagreement. We respect each other's opinions, and we're willing to get off a game that one of us, that we're on opposite sides. But for the most part, we look at the game the same way. We look at the things that are important the same way. So we're able to really form a good team. And sometimes he, you know, alerts me of things that maybe I missed or vice versa. But when he alerts me of things, it's usually things like I want to see that I just didn't see, like this Philadelphia Atlanta game. I probably would have just laid off of it because, you know, my gut told me that the line advantage was strong on Philly, but I didn't really have the heart to play a team that I didn't think was going to be good long-term, but he kind of convinced me that that was the right spot, and it worked out for us there. And I'm sure there was a game or two last week that I did similar, not that I can think of off the top of my head, but I think it was like, you know, the Broncos Giants was another one last week. I think the Giants are better than people think, even though the line is terrible. But I thought Denver was just an awful matchup. So I was able to go against my preconceived notions. And just my eye test was that the Broncos were going to crush them on the lines. And that's kind of what happened. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, good luck. I'll try to catch you this week with a 5-0. You know, contests are fun, man. Well, good luck, David. And thanks for taking the time, man. Good luck in the poker as well.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Good stuff from David Baker. That's a sharp guy. He's very measured with what he says. I liked his picks. He actually talked to me, I believe, out of Miami. I definitely will not be taking Miami in the contest. I'll be looking at Buffalo, if any side there. It's a tough one. I think I'm going to make a couple picks here. College football front, I really like UCLA favored by 11 against Fresno. I know Fresno covered and nearly beat Oregon, but now the book's out on Fresno. Hey, they're good. You can't take them lightly. I know that UCLA's had a bye week to read on social media about how great they are and how they're potentially going to get to the playoff, and all they have to do is beat Oregon at home and blah, blah, blah. I know there's some concerns there. I'm a Chip Kelly believer. You guys know I like to ride with Chip. I got UCLA favored by 11. I took Cincinnati favored by 3.5. Not to make it too West Coast centric, but the Luke Fickle USC rumors persist. That's all he's getting asked about this week leading up to the big Indiana game. And before you say the big Indiana game, folks, Cincinnati's real good. You know, Desmond Ridder, the quarterback, he could be a first round pick. They've got some future pros on the defensive side of the football. They're top 10 in the country. And in a couple weeks, they've got a big date with Notre Dame that's going to be huge for Cincinnati's chances to get to the playoffs. Obviously, they'll need chaos, but this is a good team, man. I'm just telling you, I like Cincinnati favored by 3.5. It's on the road in Indiana, which is a little risky. I think Indiana's been overvalued all season because of what they did last year. It is a noon kickoff, so I don't think you know, the crowd will be a factor in Bloomington. But those are two I really like. Of course, I took Alabama favored by 14. You have to. I mean, I don't mind paying the Alabama tax. It's fine. Alabama, you just ride them until they're done. I think it was 2 years ago. I rode them first half, and it was like 7-0. And people are like, they're just raising the number every week. What are you doing? I'm like, have you watched these guys? And they covered like 7 straight, and then finally they didn't. And that was a wrap on that. But you got to ride them while they're hot. 14? I don't think Ben Griffin Stadium or whatever it's called, Ben Griffin Hill, maybe. It's not like it's an unbelievable atmosphere and Bryce Young's going to struggle on the road. Like, you do know Florida's juggling quarterbacks, right? So give me Alabama favored by 14. I actually like the over too, 58.5. And the other one, I'm torn between these two. Penn State favored by 5.5. At home, at night, whiteout, hosting Bo Nix and overrated Auburn. Auburn has played nobody, literally. They played the second worst team in FCS. FBS, Akron. And then they played an FCS team, Alabama State. Now they have to go to Penn State at night. Happy Valley is going to be popping. Beaver Stadium, it's going to be a crazy scene. That's just, and Bo Nix has been very poor on the road. If you look up his numbers historically, like, this guy was an awesome quarterback coming in, big time talent, looked good in his first career game. And you're like, oh, they got a guy here. And he just has not delivered on the road. So I kind of like Penn State favored by 5.5. The other one, the one dog I like, Michigan State, Sparty against Miami. I don't think that highly of Miami. I'm sorry. I'm not as bullish on them as everyone else. The numbers going my way was 8. It's down to 6.5, so you're not getting the best number. If you want to wait for a 7, that would be good. But I think Michigan State can just grind it out on the ground, hang around long enough to maybe pull out the win. I definitely like them to cover, but you want to put some on the money line. I don't think that's a terrible investment. So those are my picks in college that I like. NFL obviously is a lot longer list because, you know, sides, totals, teasers. I guess the sides that I'm kind of locked in on that I'm definitely taking in the contest, Pittsburgh for sure, against Vegas. We've talked about these games all week. If you missed the pod and you're just tuning in for the picks, you got to listen to the analysis from earlier in the week. Carolina is almost certainly going to be a pick against the Saints. Those are two that I'm pretty hot on. I really want to take Rams, but everybody and their mom is on the Colts. And I'd be going against a lot of people that I respect. So we'll see about that. I think I'm going to hold my nose and bet the Jags and then take them in the contest getting 6. I'm not going to throw a bunch of trends at you, but there are some trends that favor teams that were blown out in week 1. Carolina applies. The Jaguars apply. The Atlanta Falcons, I'm looking hard at. I know it's double figures. It's a divisional matchup. There's just a lot of things. Week 2, don't overreact and just bet teams that won. The Philadelphia game, we talked about at length with Baker. It's so tough. A lot of people like Philly here. And you just listen to some of the stuff Baker said, and then you think about it, like, coming into the season, San Fran was one of the 3 best teams in the NFC. The Eagles had one of the lowest season win totals. Yet now San Francisco's only favored by 3 on the road. And it's not like they have to go back to the West Coast and then come back. They stayed on the East Coast. There's a lot of stuff. I'm a Kyle Shanahan believer. I'm way more bullish on Jimmy Garoppolo than almost everyone else. I don't know. I really want to take San Fran, but I'm not going to take both the Rams and San Fran. I can't take all the teams from the NFC West again. I do, by the way, really like Arizona, but that's a game I'm just not touching. I think I'm probably going to take Tennessee going up against Seattle if I can get the 6. The contest has it as 6. It's just betting against Russell Wilson is just not fun. You know, he's just that good. He always delivers. And you basically got to hope a Tennessee defense that never shows up, like, does something. And that's a tough ask. But we do see some of these teams that were incredible in week 1 regress a little bit. I think it's obvious you got to look at the Packers, but these divisional matchups and the stuff I touched on with Chernoff on Thursday and then Baker today, just listen, there's some interesting things there, especially these divisional matchups. Just be careful, folks. A lot of landmines out there. Everybody, happy hunting in week 3 in the NFL. I'm sorry, week 2 in the NFL, week 3 in college football. We'll talk to you Monday.